Minnesota Reads is a new feature on Northland Morning, featuring Minnesota authors talking about their work. This morning, we are thrilled to have Lisa Lungi Larson joining us on the phone this morning, and her book is a marvelous compilation of stories. It's called The Troll with No Heart in His Body and Other Tales of Trolls from Norway. Lisa, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Nice to have you on the line this morning. Well, too many Lisas will no doubt end up confused.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Now, I read the book yesterday. Betsy Bowen, not to gloss over this by any means, Betsy Bowen did the woodcut illustrations, and they are marvelous. So it's a big, wonderful picture book that's meant to be enjoyed aloud and with people of all ages, I would imagine. The stories are deceptively simple. What I found most fascinating, though, especially to read it going into the stories, was your introduction. You make a lot of interesting points in that introduction, and one of the things that you say is that kids need troll stories. Now, I'd never thought of myself as needing troll stories before, so explain that a little bit.
Well, there is just something about, you know, the troll, and the troll is, a troll is like the opposite of a human being. You know, it's really big, it's ugly, it can't come out during the light of day, because if the sun shines on the troll, he bursts and turns into stone. He's fundamentally just really evil, and that evil is also tied in with his basic sort of stupidity. And so it's like he's a foil, and in order to trick a troll, and every one of the stories, at its core, is a story about how to outwit a troll. And you encounter trolls, you know, all over, just the way that you encounter evil, and, you know, all over. And in order to fight that kind of evil, you have to be the opposite of what it is. You know that old saying about, you know, you should be careful about who you choose for your enemy, because you tend to become like your enemy? And so by choosing trolls for your enemy, you kind of remember how to be a human being. So to fight a troll, you know, you have to be good, you have to be kind, you have to be persistent, you have to be really intelligent, you have to be plucky, gutsy. You know, you have to use the help of your friends. It's exactly the troll's opposite. And so when you tell these troll stories and you talk to kids after telling the story about how the boy or the girl, or usually together, they outwit the troll and what they could do, boy, their little minds just go racing. And you could speak to them happily for hours about how they would have outwitted the troll, you know, what they could do. So it's, yeah. We
now,
trolls.
Trolls, the other thing that you point out that those of us in America may or may not know, trolls are of the landscape. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that you feel that trolls are important and troll stories are important for kids. Does this tie in at all to the need that has been talked about so often in the last few years for kids to connect with nature?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Yes, absolutely. Kids, when you would tell them these stories, you know, they are of the landscape, and so you can go outside, and even though trolls are extinct, you can find remnants of the trolls. So it's another way of making the landscape alive and magical with stories to tell. Like, I have a troll's eyeball that my son found. He was 7 years old, and we were swimming out at Stony Point, and suddenly he just dove into the lake, and when he came up, he had this white rock in his hand. He goes, "Mom, I found a troll's eyeball." And, you know, I carry this with me, and I show it to the kids, and you can kind of see where the eye, where the pupil was, the iris and everything. And it's just sort of this amazing thing. So you can go to the beach, or you can go in the woods and find troll remnants. And it makes being outside that much more fun and connects you with the landscape. And it makes you look at it in a new way. Like, just think about it. Up in Canada, you know, you have Sleeping Giant Peninsula. You know, that was a troll that was lying on his back napping when the sun came up, and he turned into this huge peninsula. And there's a lake in the middle, and that, I told my kids at least, is where his belly button used to be.
Uh-huh.
We went swimming in that belly button. And, you know, think of it, Giant's Ridge, just north of here.
A troll.
Oh, absolutely. They're everywhere.
Now,
I have a whole photography thing I've been doing up when we go paddling in the BWCA of trolls in the BWCA. That's pretty fun.
What a wonderful picture book that would make. Just to kind of get you in the habit of seeing trolls and being aware that they're there. You say that there are four main practices that make us human. And you say that kids don't get many of these. And as a result, for some kids, it's harmful to them. It turns them, in some instances, to violence. Talk about those four things that kids and humans need.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, we sort of get enamored with our modernity, how sort of modern we are, and we forget that every child, when it's born and in its first few years, you know, if it had been born back in the Stone Age, its needs are exactly the same as a child that was born 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 years ago. You know, inside of ourselves, we are no different. And so we have, you see that, and I'm, you know, since I wrote that, you know, there's more things that sort of make us more like animals and more and different, but it's those fundamental things that the need for fire. You see that sitting around a campfire or even having a candle lit at dinner for children. There's something just fascinating about that. There's the need for structure, and stories are very, I forgot now what it is I say because I don't have the book in front of me, but it's the need for, what did I say? You have to remind
you
me.
You talked about engaging in ritual and ceremony, including storytelling.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is something that sets humans apart from other animals, is that we do engage in ritual and storytelling. We don't do enough of it. I think when you turn the storytelling, which has been with humans since language evolved, and dance can be a form of storytelling, right? And art can be a form of storytelling. All of these, and the use of the language to create a story, when we turn that over to the television or to the video games, I think you, particularly when you do it that way, it's quite damaging to a child because they need human contact in order to fully develop into who they are and that interaction. And the thing about it that I am so struck by when I go and tell stories, not even just read them, but tell stories to children, is that when I tell that story orally, children listen, and I don't use any props or anything. It's just the words and me telling the story. I can adapt the story to their level of interest, and if they're a little bit scared, I can tone it down, I can explain it, or I can make it more scary. But what you see is that if you watch something on the screen or a television, you know, that can be really scary because what you're watching is somebody else's idea of what a troll looks like or what the landscape looks like or what the situation is. But if you tell that story and engage in storytelling, every child will create his or her own image. It's their imagination that's fired up. They're not admiring somebody else's imagination, but using their own. And when they use their own imagination that way, it's always just right for them.
You talk about the need to create and use complex tools, including writing. Mm-hmm. And I'm gathering that by complex tools, you don't mean your iPhone, your tablet, your laptop computer.
No, I think it's, I think there's just something, you know, I'm a knitter, and I like to felt wool, and I've observed over the years working with children that when you get them engaged in using their hands, and I mean, there's a place for the iPhone and all of these modern tools that we have too, but not to the exclusion of other tools. I think we have to make sure that it's just one more tool, that it doesn't exclude all of the others.
You give examples and you talk about things that kids could create with their hands, drawing, writing, whittling, right. Knitting, painting.
Fashioning things out of clay. When
right.
You watch a group of kids creating pots like they do for the Hungry Bowl event here every year, there's just something that connects them with who they really are. They're kids that are usually troublemakers that become really quiet and absorbed. We need to use our hands, and we need to use them to create things that are functional, that we need, and beautiful.
The thing, the final thing that you say that kids need is to till the soil. And I think a lot of schools are finding that in the gardening programs that they're getting going now.
And isn't that wonderful? I think, you know, and personally I'm working on my storytelling garden. I am learning stories, finding stories about each and every one of the flowers and plants in my garden, about its origin. Getting kids outside, get them into the garden to till the soil, because we are that one species that need to grow things. In order, you know, for our bodies, to nurture our bodies and to survive, to find, you know, to find the herbs and to find the berries that are out there and feed ourselves. It's been, you know, it's been coupled with our survival since the beginning, the need to get outside. And you notice that children who get hours and hours of play outside, they're so much calmer, they're so much happier than when they've been sitting inside watching, you know, a video game or playing on the computer. I don't, you know, you don't have to be a social scientist with hours and hours of research to know that. But if you know, certainly there are wonderful books that have been written about it, and I've written about it myself quite a bit. The need to get children outside to talk about and how to do it and why. I'm going to leave the serious arguments to the social scientists. But there are the expression? It's called the a nature deficit disorder.
Exactly,
is what they're calling it now, and I think there's some wonderful things that have been written about it that supports precisely the point that I'm trying to make, which is get those kids outside, tell them stories about trolls, or maybe about the Nissa, or about the flower fairies, or elves and gnomes and the hill folk that live underneath your house.
I think it would be a really good time of year for folks to maybe go out and take a hike and take a look at the landscape, because it occurs to me that the silhouettes of the trolls would be very easy to spot.
They are
at this time of year.
Oh, with the snow covering up some of the distracting features, you see them right away. I bet you're good at it.
I'm going to start. I'm going to start. Lisa, thank you so very, very much for joining us this morning. It was just wonderful to have the conversation. Lisa Lungay-Larson is the author of The Troll with No Heart in His Body and Other Tales of Trolls from Norway. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.